This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of April 26th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night is my partner, my buddy, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Oh, I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
Except for this wind that's whistling around outside, I'm doing okay. A little sleepy, but, you know, I'll get over it as we get on with the show here.
Yeah, I mean, that's good, because I'll say something that'll be sure to get your goat and wake you up.
I thought it was the other way around. I was always saying things that make your blood pressure go up.
Well, my blood pressure could go up quite a ways before it registers anywhere, so I'm good.
All right. Again, folks, please go to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and get your podcasts and rate, review, and follow us so we can get more pod cred. We need that going, and we would appreciate it. And I also want to take a moment and acknowledge that we lost our dear friend and colleague, the godfather of Japanese baseball coverage, Wayne Grassick, 4 years ago this past week. So wow. May he rest in peace.
Indeed.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like 4 years, though.
No, he's like with me on a daily basis, so it doesn't seem long, no.
No, he's with me as well. So we love you and we think of you often, buddy.
Indeed.
Hope you're resting in peace.
Thanks.
And another quick order of business is that no fans will be allowed at 4 venues where the coronavirus is exploding. And those venues include Tokyo Dome, Koshien, Jingu, and Kyocera Dome. And that'll be affecting games involving, obviously, the Giants, the Tokyo Yakult Swallows, the Tigers, and the Buffaloes. So, again, people, mask up and hunker down. Do it for the economies and do it so we can enjoy baseball again. I mean, geez, do it.
Yes, indeed. Do your part so we can do our part.
Exactly. All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with former Marines right-hander Mike Bolsinger. We're going to discuss the Bay Stars. Masahiro Tanaka, high-quality starts, and then handle some high heat if we have some time. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, gang. Well, I had a nice chat the other day with former Lotte Marine pitcher Mike Bolsinger, who many of you remember pitched in Japan in 2018 with good results, and 2019 with less good results, and made some more news recently in his lawsuit against the Houston Astros for stealing signs in his final MLB game in which they lit him up. So we'll, you know, go on about this. Mike is now in somewhere in Texas. I don't know the location of his hometown. He told me the name, but I had never heard of it. I think it's north of Dallas somewhere. But
okay.
He was, and we'll talk a little bit about that. When he left the Marines, he was a little upset about how he wasn't given an extension. But you'll hear he's really mellowed on that topic. I think the Houston Astros have given him something much bigger and more obvious to vent his frustration on. But he's such a pleasant guy, as we remember him. And it was happy to, you know, it was really refreshing to hear him in good spirits. So let's have a listen to The World According to Mike Bolsinger.
Okay, our guest this week is a longtime friend of the show, Mike Bolsinger. And how you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there.
You're hanging in there. Absolutely. You're the king of hanging in there.
Yeah.
If we had an election, you know, we'd vote for you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're talking to Mike. He's in Texas, and he's getting ready for his season with the Long Island Ducks.
I want to talk about the adjustments you made. You talked about physical delivery, mechanical adjustments. Can you explain some of those, or any of the key ones for you?
For me, it was just certain timing. For me, timing was off, release point was off, and I think it was more of not tipping your pitches. I think that was the biggest thing.
Okay.
So I can make a little dig here.
Yeah.
In Japan, they do it the right way.
Okay.
Stealing signs, if yeah. I can say.
You can
it's
say
done
that.
The right, it's done the right way to where, hey, you're on the mound. You're doing something that is out of the ordinary for a certain pitch. Well, they're going to pick up on that. So, you know, my pitching coach taught me, you know, we gotta do something totally different here, because what you're doing, you're tipping your pitches okay. to these guys. So we, like I said, we changed everything from the way that, you know, I would get my sign to me squatting down, and to where I finished. It all changed. That's completely different from how I used to pitch in the United States. But I can respect that. If I'm doing something wrong, then that's kind of on me. And if you can see that from the dugout, and if you can watch a video of me pitching and try and watch things and pick up on things, hey, you know, his glove is a little bit more vertical when he's throwing his fastball, or it's a little bit more flat. I can respect that. And that's my job, to pick up on that and get better. And I remember, you know, it was an early game against SoftBank, and I was throwing good pitches, and I was tipping my pitches so bad, and I could tell because they were taking just ferocious swings at everything. And he was like, man, like your tip, like I was watching the videos. I was like, just the slightest thing. And after that, it was just lights out, completely wow. different. But that's just how engaged, you know, that whole entire coaching staff was. You know, they were aware of everything. You know, it's simply amazing. Like I said, it was done the right way, the way that you would want baseball to be played.
Yeah, ideally, as opposed to knowing what the pitch being called is.
Exactly.
Okay. That's really interesting. They have a long tradition, of course, in Japan of sign stealing. And so the right way, you know, how I don't want to categorize Japan as doing it the right way so easily, but in that respect, I certainly understand where you're coming from. A different population of hitters in Japan. I mean, they've got the same kinds of hitters, but the mix is all completely different. And you've got all these left-handers who basically their job is to drive you insane.
I remember, who was it from? The Fighters. I can't remember his name. The lefty.
Nishikawa Kondo.
Yeah. Man, I think it was every time it was 15 plus pitches in at bat. And I'm just like, man, I don't want to hit the guy, but let's just walk him or something. I'm over this. You're wasting my pitches out here.
Yeah, Kensuke Kondo with the Fighters, who always has like an OBP of like 400. And Akira Nakamura, the Hawks,
are yeah.
two guys who basically, they have that ability to drive the ball when they want, but if they also can slap it, they can also hit it foul, and they also never hit it, almost never swing at anything outside of the zone if it's not two strikes. Now, the second year you had a nerve?
It was the weirdest thing. I had actually wanted to start conditioning a little bit harder, and I started running a lot more in spring training. And something just went wrong with my heel, my left heel. And it affected me big time when I was pitching too, because it was really hard for me to land on my foot. And I would say probably I got three shots when I was in Japan. I went to the hospital three times. It got three shots in my heel, and finally the third one worked. And I think that was in mid to late June. And that's kind of when I went back into form from 2018. That second half of the season was actually super awesome. But yeah, it was tough because I never had something like that happen before. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was some sort of a freak thing. I don't know. It was unfortunate because I really wanted to show up and continue what I was doing the year before. But I mean, injuries, I guess, happen. So
they do. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, that backside of the good experience was that baseball in Japan is still a business and they still make business decisions that don't, you know, that befuddle us.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I looked at your numbers, as I said, and I thought your the quality of your pitches was, if anything, a little better. But I thought that the fact was that just, you know, it was like, it seemed to me everything worked for you the first year. I remember Katsuya Kakanaka hit a bunch of home runs in your games.
Yeah.
And, you know, you didn't hit them for anybody else, but hit them for you. And
loved it.
When you put a ball in, when you got a ball in play, they were turning them into outs a lot. And then the next year, it's like they weren't. You know, it's because it was, you know, the balls were finding holes and you're jamming guys in there. And it's like everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And of course, Lotte being Lotte and, you know, being a baseball team, a typical baseball team, they went, well, it's the pitcher's fault.
Yeah. I mean, but it is what it is.
True.
You know, look, I didn't have any problem when I was sent down to the minor leagues, because that's another thing. I forget to mention them. Those coaches down there were... It was so much fun to go. I don't know why. It was fun. It wasn't fun to go down to my leagues, but the coaches down there made it so easy. And I loved interacting with all those younger guys. And it was a lot of fun. And again, the coaches, you know, when I came down there, they took the time to also work with me. Again, me with an open mind. I said, hey, if you guys see anything, you know, something's going wrong. Like I get my heel doesn't feel well. But do you see anything else? And, you know, again, I made a few changes with these, you know, I take the recommendations of what they say and I kind of put it out there. And, again, I think it was one of the last times I was down there, I really started to figure stuff out again and it really helped. And, I think when I came back up too, the pitching coach at the time, Yoshi, he worked well with me too. At one point he thought I was going to the plate too slow, and me and him kind of worked on stuff in our bullpens of switching up my delivery, my speed and my delivery. And there was something that I'd never really done before. I was coming set, you know, it'd be just about to come set and then pitch, or come set and pitch, come set and wait. And that was just his kind of recommendation. And I was like, you know what, if this is what you think is going to work, it's going to work. And I just took all the information that he gave me. And again, that was probably around June when my heel started healing up. And, you know, he gave me all this kind of detail on what he thinks, what would help me pitch better. And again, it just kind of started taking off. And again, I felt like I was back in 2018.
Okay. I want to talk about your lawsuit because it made news here. And as I said, you're part of the family. You're part of the Japan family. And how's that going?
It's, I think it's going. I think now it has to be filed in Texas.
Right.
So right now you're trying to find a Texas lawyer that will take it on as well. So I think that's the next step in it all.
Okay.
But we'll see. But we'll see what happens. I don't know. I think for me, first off, it's, you know, I want to talk to that, whoever that lawyer will be. I'll talk to him probably and kind of catch his drift and see how he feels about it. And honestly, if he doesn't feel good about it, then I'm not going to waste my time or anyone else's time on the whole thing.
Okay.
I mean, for me, it was, you know, I think we can all agree what they did was wrong. And,
sure.
And I didn't feel like they, you know, I don't want to say punish. I don't know another word to use, but I don't feel like they got punished enough for what they did.
Mm. Well, there wasn't really any, I mean, the team was involved and they fired the general manager and they fired the manager.
Yeah. And they're all playing and they're all managing. And like I said, when I got sent down that day, I took it on the chin. I was a little embarrassed of that game, but I took it and said, hey, you know, I got my butt kicked. Let's go down to the minor leagues, keep pitching and see what happens. And I mean, shoot, I remember that year in the minor leagues, I think I had one of the best years in minor leagues that year. I had like a 1.17 ERA through 50 innings. So anytime I got sent down, I made it a point, you know what, hey, you're getting sent down, but still go out there and pitch. And that was the point that I made. But, you know, once I found out all about that, it kind of, you know, I would say pissed me off a little bit.
just a little.
Because now all these thoughts are going in my mind. You know, what if I didn't pitch that game? What if I completely skipped that whole series against them? Because I was actually coming back and pitching well. I'd pitched against Boston, went four innings. I gave up one run in extra innings. I'd pitched against the Angels, went three innings, gave up one run. I'd ended up pitching against the Tigers, doing really well. So I felt like stuff was kind of coming together for me. I was starting to really feel myself. You know, and then I think about, you know, what if I would have skipped that? And then I also think about, well, look at the year that I had the next year in Japan in 2018. What if I had had the chance to finish out that year in 2017, put something together and come back strong the next year and do what I did in Japan? You know, you think about stuff, man.
Yeah.
And I see these quotes, I've saved quotes that I've read that just really tick me off, you know, them explaining, you know, there's a lot of money on the line. And now you're telling me, you can tell me the pitches that are coming, you know, well shoot, what about the other guy? What about the guy who's pitching? You don't, I obviously you don't give a crap about them because you only care about yourself and the money you're putting in your own wallet. You don't care about what it does to someone else.
Right.
And to be honest with you, I've only, you know, I get stuff on Twitter about that, but it seems to just be from a small area in the United States that the fans are giving me trouble about that. It's somewhere in Texas, somewhere down there. But, you know, a lot of other people have been pretty supportive about it. I mean,
yeah. Well,
if anyone can explain, if one of these people from Houston can sit and chat with me on the phone and explain to me, you know, it's not a big deal. Well, let's look at it in a real life situation. What if you're at work and you have all this information for a presentation, but someone goes and hacks into your computer, takes it all away. They use it for their presentation. They get promoted and you get fired. Well, I guess from that scenario, you should just take it and just, you know, it is what it is. It's life.
Yeah. But we also, baseball is really difficult because there's always this sort of superficial image of everything being clean and fair. But the reality is everybody's a human being and they do things they shouldn't be doing, you know? So, but still MLB spends a lot of money polishing this image as, you know, we're something special. We're the American game. And then it's got to really sting when we're the American game and we do things the right way and we hold everybody to the highest standards. Unless it's embarrassing and let's just forget about it.
I mean, that's exactly what happened. It'll always frustrate me, especially again, I don't like to be hated and I don't like to get the messages that I do. I'd rather sit down and talk to people and that have a different view from me and just kind of get their point of view and why they think it wasn't such a big deal. But,
right.
Obviously that'll never happen. No. Maybe unless I just honestly look at one of these negative comments that are thrown at me on Twitter and just reach out and be like, hey, what's your phone number? Let's talk over the phone. I bet I can change your mind.
Yeah. Well, personalizing things is really important because we can, like you said, when the other guy is the other team's pitcher, he's nobody. When he's a human being, he's a different person. When he's somebody you're standing next to in the grocery store, he's a different person. He's a human being. He's got a mom. He's got a dad. He's got siblings. He's got friends. He's got bills to pay. But when he's the other pitcher, he's just some guy you beat.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just you go through all this stuff to get to the major leagues and get to where you are at that point. And then to kind of know that, you know, I think – this might have had something to do with why I got sent down and I'm not back to where I am. Now, did it ruin my career? I don't think you let something like that ruin your career. I think the only thing that can ruin your career is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Did it alter my career? Sure as hell did. I believe 100% it did. Mm-hmm. 1000% it did.
Now, when you came to Japan, you were not mindful of the cheating.
No, I just thought, hey, I got lit up. It is what it is.
And so obviously the first thing was you're rebuilding here and your work with the Kobayashi on your mechanics was 100% of I can be better. It was all.
No, it was, I can be better. And I think this person knows a lot more about this sport than I do. And I think he has a lot more knowledge than I do. And I know he has a lot more knowledge about Japanese baseball than I do. So why not take the information that he's given me and the help that he's given me and apply it to what I'm doing? I mean, you gotta be pretty not smart to not do that. Like I said, I had all the right tools around me with the, to me, which I thought was one of the best organizations, from the president to the GM, to my manager, to my pitching coach, to my teammates, like I said, to my translator, to the people that worked at the stadium. Mm-hmm. I had the best situation that I could possibly have. And they made me feel so comforting when I came to this whole different country, especially when my, you know, wife was pregnant. Mm-hmm. There too. They made it so easy. So my mindset right now is to go play independent ball and get back to Asia. That is 100% my goal. If I have to write, what's your goal this year? I will put in parentheses, Asia baseball. Okay. That's it.
All right. I just want to thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll be in touch again, and hopefully we'll have you on when you're back in Japan.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the plan. That's plan A.
That's, again, put it in my notebook, Asia, back in the podcast in Asia.
All right. Thanks, Mike. What a pleasure to stay in touch with you. And I'm looking forward to keeping that appointment with you on the podcast here in Japan.
Yeah. I want to be able to do the next interview with him, hopefully in person. He just sounds like a really, really fun guy. And actually he reminds me, I don't know exactly what part of Texas he's from.
I don't think he's from Texas.
Yeah. I don't know exactly where he's from, but he reminds me of my college roommate who was from College Station, Texas.
Oh my goodness.
And the delivery and the tone and the way he enunciates and everything. A lot of the speech patterns remind me of my first roommate in college who was from College Station. So, like I said, I don't know where he's from, but it was like I was listening to somebody who was a some kind of relative of my first college roommate. Because we had never, I think you did the first chat with him, or the chat that we had before. And I'm not sure if that was his first year or.
It was his first year.
Okay. It was 2018.
It was very early in the season. Yeah. It might even have been in the preseason.
Okay. Okay. So it was so clear, but I'd never really heard him talk for so long. So I didn't notice it before, but anyway, I'll tell you what, I've never heard any player ever say that the farm team was fun.
Yeah.
You think? I mean, I totally understand. And I get him. I know why he said it. And I know what it meant in the context that it wasn't fun going down to the farm, but you and I, we work in this industry in which, you know, teaching time is extremely limited. So you get new people in, you've got to train them, but you train them and you don't get to evaluate them from story to story. You just get the next story, you say, hey, clean this up a little bit and don't do that. And you go on to the next story. Mm-hmm. It's always about the next story. And you keep thinking about the next story and the next day, but you don't get a chance to really teach. And I think I imagine it's the same for these baseball players, where they have games every day. You got to get ready. You got to get prepared. You got to get ready for the next team, the next pitcher, the next batter, the next guy, whatever it is. And so there's hardly enough time to go through and say, okay, let's slow down. Let's take a deep breath. Let's do this, break this down, go through your mechanics and teach. And you heard Mike say, look, the guys I was talking to, I guess I would, assuming it was Kobayashi.
Masahide Kobayashi, yeah.
Masahide Kobayashi, who pitched in the States a little bit himself. And he's saying, you know, Mike is saying, this guy knows more about baseball than I do, and he definitely knows more about MPB players than I do. I can gain some knowledge here. And they're taking the time to teach. And so I just really appreciated that. And him saying it's fun, I just thought was just never heard this. And
yeah, well, obviously I hadn't heard it either because I pretty much broke down. But, you know, my thoughts on that is, how can you be a coach and not want to be around players, not want to help guys who say, you know, teach me what you know. Help me learn the things that you know I can do to be better. I mean, that's what these guys are there for. And it's, of course, coaching in Japan and coaching in America are different modes of the same profession. In Japan, right, basically the coaches are there expected to tell you how to play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And in America, the coaches are there to help you see the game or understand the game that you see better.
Mm-hmm.
And so the players typically will go to the coach and ask for help. Do you see this? Do you see that? Can you help me? What can I do in this situation? In Japan, it's more like, you're doing it the wrong way. You're doing it the right way. Do it more like this. It's a more Japanese is a more proactive kind of coaching. And
mm-hmm.
it doesn't, players talk about, you know, and Mike did in another part of our chat, talked about nobody wants to be sort of the ugly foreigner, you know, the foreigner who says, I know everything.
Right. We don't want to be that guy. We just don't realize that we are on occasion.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
No, I think you absolutely have it right. And mark that on your calendar.
Hashtag
hi. No, buddy, you mark it on your calendar.
Okay. I think you, no, I mean that I said it, not that you had it right.
Oh, okay.
No. In that everybody says it, but I think what you said is right, is that people, because the, you know, we miss the cultural stop signs that we're used to. You know, we don't mm-hmm. see the ones we're not, you know, it's like, they paint the stop signs a different color here, and so we don't know to recognize them as stop signs.
Mm-hmm, right.
And why are the Japanese not doing this? There's no red sign in front of me telling me not to.
Right.
And they're all looking at you funny. So yeah, that's a good point. But I think that era of the players coming over here and saying, I'm really too good to play in Japanese baseball. It's a step down for me. And I'm only, you know, they can't teach me anything.
Mm-hmm.
If that ever existed, and I believe it, you know, it did to some degree. I think it barely exists now. I really find it, because I have to say, virtually every player I talk to says, I don't want to be that guy. I came over here not wanting to be that guy. Well, maybe they're all lying, but I think the truth is they're conscious of being good citizens. So
yeah. And I remember Mike when he, of course, because he came up and played for the Dodgers, and I remember when he went into a situation they had a bunch of injuries in the rotation and they needed some starters, and he stepped in, and I kept saying, man, this guy is throwing pitches right down the middle, but he's getting batters out because they're expecting something else. And he seemed to bring that kind of pitching style to Japan, except for the fact that he played at windy, very windy Zozo Marine. So I think some of his pitches might have been affected by some of the wind, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to see him pitch live at the stadium. But I think when, you know, you come into a situation in Japan, the players are different, the culture is different, you've got the music blaring when you're pitching, and there's fans jumping in the stands at, you know, Marines fans jumping all the time. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, win or go. They like to say win or go home, but I think it's win or go away, because, you know, you're a foreign guy. You're brought in to help.
Mm.
you can't just be average. And so if things don't go right and you end up getting sent to the minor leagues, I would think that that seems like a devastating thing. And he learned or found out that it was something that could improve him. And I really appreciated that aspect of him saying that. And I wish we could have talked to him at the time and heard, you know, exactly what he was feeling at the time before he went down and then after he went down in the minors and learned about how it was. But yeah, as for the Dodgers Astros cheating lawsuit, I'll pitch in some money for that. So hopefully he'll find that lawyer who wants to take it's so interesting. I found it very interesting that he has to find a lawyer in Texas to take the case, because I'm thinking no lawyer in Texas wants to take that case. But I bet you can find a lot of LA lawyers who take the case.
Well, that was probably the problem.
Yeah.
So I guess the last thing I would want to mention, I made a reference to his 2019 pitching being in some ways better than 2018. I have to qualify that. His three true outcomes, strikeouts, walks, and home runs were all worse. In 2019 as a whole, I don't have his, I think I looked at his breakdowns before and after his injury, and he was similar. His results were similar after the injury to what he had done the year before, but he wasn't getting the 8 runs a game of run support that he'd gotten in 2018. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was when he put the ball in play, the Marines' defensive efficiency ratio was, which is the percentage of balls in play turned into outs.
Mm-hmm.
Was 716 in 2018, which is okay. You know, it's about the Marines' average, I'm going to say. It's basically okay. A 284 batting average on balls in play. It's a little high, but it's you can live with it. But in 2019, it was 672. So every time the ball was put in play, basically they had a, you know, and this is against a guy who doesn't strike out a lot of batters.
Right.
So they're hitting like 330.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's in addition to the fact that he was giving up more home runs and he was walking a few more batters and giving up and not striking out as many, the balls in play. And I think part of that was had to do, he was getting more weak contact. And weak contact is good and bad. Because basically,
right, it can be, yes, yes.
Right, because it means that the little duffers and you know, shuffling through the infield don't get caught, don't get to the fielders in time to make outs. So I think that hurt him. Everything else is about the same, but he probably gave up probably more. I'll have to go back and check, but I bet he gave up more infield singles in 2019 than he did 2018. So, yeah, he was probably the same pitcher, but the overall results were poor, and teams, you know, make team decisions based on the big picture. And so that happened.
Yeah, I often say there's a fine line between winning and losing, and that's one of the reasons I say your team can improve from a bad season results-wise, but not actually improve in the results in the standings or in the wins column.
Oh,
because
yeah.
You can get better, but it's just not reflected in wins and losses.
Absolutely. Just, happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
And then, you know, teams that do really well that don't really have the underlying performance to sustain it. People are shocked when they get bad, you know, when they don't get better the next year.
Right. Yeah, it's true. Okay. All right. Well, with the wind whistling around outside, let's make a seamless transition.
Like, it's almost like we're, you know, it's in honor of Mike Bolsinger, you know, got the little Chiba wind going on.
Yeah. let's pick a seamless transition and talk about the Bay Stars, who have just had an awful start to the season. And I've seen a lot of things on Twitter. I've heard people talking about, oh, yeah, look at Alex Ramirez. He must have been a magician to get this team, you know, anywhere near 500. And why is it so bad? And is Miura really a good manager or a bad manager? Or, as you pointed out this past week, and as you brought up in the Central League Prediction Show special that we did, as soon as things go wrong for Daisuke, Miura, the new manager, the blame would be in the direction of the previous manager, his predecessor. So that's what happened, apparently. I didn't see the article. I know that you wrote about it. I was reading your article. I think I got halfway through, and you talk about yourself, how busy you are. Just imagine having twins who are 4 years old.
I don't even – don't torture me, man. Don't, like, say that, because I'll start thinking about it, and then I'll go out and – I don't know what. Walk off a pier.
And be busier. Yeah, you'll be even busier. But anyway.
I'll give up on life.
Yeah, the Bay Stars had a 10-game skid that included a couple ties in there. But they ended that on Friday, and they got some help from the Tigers, a couple errors, including a big one on Teruaki Sato. A learning moment from him, the rookie. I think people are going to remember that error, but they're going to forget that pitcher Kosuke Baba made an error on a double play ball before that that would have gotten him out of the inning. But unfortunately, he didn't make that play, and then the bases ended up being loaded, and then Sato missed the ball and misplayed it. And
I heard John's voice watching the Tigers games this weekend, you know, in right field about, oh, I want to see him play more in right field. And I could hear Tigers fans saying, no, you don't.
Yeah, I think we've seen enough. We get the picture. But you know what? I think eventually he might end up in left field, but that's fine. Remember, he's a first baseman. So I want to see him play there too. So, and that's real grass out there. At Koshien, that's another thing. So there are probably a lot of factors that went into him not fielding that ball. But I'm not going to make excuses. He missed it, and it happened. But like I said, it's a learning moment for him. This is about the Bay Stars. And I went through – I know you have some things to talk about. This is probably the worst start we could have envisioned. I actually didn't envision anything worse than – they're not even winning at a one-win a week clip right now. And that's pretty bad. So they're 4-19-4 to start the season. So what I did was
when's the last time you saw a team with as many ties as wins? I think they're playing soccer or something.
Only the first month of the season, and all the ties were actual ties around their necks that they were wearing when they traveled. So I went through, because remember, this team was supposed to have Kimiyasu Kudo as its manager a long time ago. And they signed him, and then they couldn't figure out the details, and so they actually didn't officially sign him. And since then, they've had some managers. But in the past, I don't know, their past three managers are the managers I looked at. Takao Obana, and that's starting in 2010. And then Kiyoshi Nakahata. And then Alex Ramirez, and now Daisuke Miura. So I totaled up the wins and losses. Obana, he went 95-181. Nakahata went 239-319. So I added those together. It's 334-500. So that's a 400 winning percentage. And Alex Ramirez, in his five seasons, he was 336-337. For a winning percentage of 499. So they've just really made some, I don't want to blame it all on the manager. I didn't like Nakahata as a manager. I thought Obana was going to be better. They just didn't win under him, but I don't know that he had enough talent. So it's not really that fair to compare. And Miura, yeah, he's off to a rough start and doesn't have the team that he envisioned, I guess, at the time of signing his contract, because we can't even say spring training, because we never made it that far in terms of getting the players over here. So even with, you know, starting over and thinking, okay, well, once the foreign players get here and get some time under, they're going to get some time under their belts. They're going to get their feet under them, have their footing, and they're going to do better. But it's still early. It's not fair to compare all these things. But I'm just thinking, this is a bad start. It's a really bad start. It's a black eye for Miura as a manager, as a start. And pretty soon, they're not going to be able to keep blaming Ramirez for his problems, for the problems of Miura.
Well, so they're going to give it a, you know, you can do that with a foreign manager. You can do things with a foreign manager that you can't really get away with a Japanese manager. because
okay, but yeah, because at some point you can beat the horse, and the horse is dead, and it doesn't work anymore.
Well, yeah, that's true though, because you know, interesting is the Yukon Fuji article. I, you know, it's funny because I looked at, you know, who wrote it, and I can't pronounce his name. He's one of these. He's one of the hundreds of guys that we know from the ballpark that we don't know.
Oh yeah, we see them when we go out there. We say hi to them, but yeah, we don't know.
I do know a guy who writes for Yukon Fuji, but it wasn't him. So anyway, so I know him. I know him. I see him a lot at the ballpark. I don't have this impression that he's this scandal guy, but I did have a look. I did have somebody on Twitter say, "Look, don't even read the Yukon Fuji. It's a hopeless rag." And I know that's not true because, like I said, I know a couple of the writers there who are really good. But the thing I would want to mention before I get into the details was that the comments on Sponavi website, which posted the article, were very much, it was so funny because a year ago when they were saying, you know, Ramirez can't manage, you know, the best manager in BayStars history can't manage.
Right.
And because A, B, and C, I go through, maybe I'll go through that on the blog and rather than waste the time here, like I'm going to waste the time on the blog. But the thing last year was like the arguments kept shifting. Okay. In July, it was Keita Sano can't bat in the cleanup hitter because he's no, can't put bat in the cleanup spot because he's no good. You know, that was one of the reasons pointing out why Ramirez was such a bad manager. And of course, he was leading the league in batting at the time, but he hadn't hit a home run. So, you know, you can't have a guy who doesn't have a home run batting cleanup. And, you know, at the end of the season, when he had plenty of home runs and was, he was really a, you know, he had an all-star caliber season.
Yes,
that argument just kind of disappeared. That's it was this way with all the arguments about Ramirez. They just kind of disappeared and went away. So anyway, but at that time, the BayStars fans were very frustrated and they were basically getting on the train and saying, yeah, he should be gone. He's hopelessly incompetent. But this time, the BayStars comments, I read about five or six comments on the internet. They're all saying like, what are you talking about? You know, you got rid of him when you got rid of him and you can't, you know, you have to just take responsibility for your own team. And one of the arguments from the Yukon Fuji article, I'll just save one of them. If you want to read the rest, read my blog, Other Uses for Old Managers, or New Uses for Old Managers. One of the arguments was that under Ramirez, he managed Major League style, which meant less practice. Okay?
Okay.
And manager Miura kept doing that. That's why Ramirez is at fault because manager Miura has practiced less, which my point is, it's like buying a house that you don't like the color and then saying it's the previous owner's fault that you didn't want to paint it.
Exactly. Yeah. You decided that you're going to keep that color and now you're complaining.
Right.
About
so,
it.
But all the arguments are pretty fluid and I'm not going to go into the details here, but you know, all the things we learned about last year, like I said, they changed, and I think the arguments are going to change. And I think it is very unfair to blame Miura for a, you know, a disastrous season when they haven't played very many games. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah, that's why I said it's a bad start. Yeah, that's all it is. Cool. Because I think the story I read this past week talking about the 10 straight or 10 consecutive losses said that the BayStars lost 10 consecutive games in 2019, only 2 years ago, and they finished second that year. So it's not like, you know, a 10-game skid is going to eat away at your schedule and put you in last place. It's going to dent it, but it's not the problem. The problem isn't that they won or they didn't win over a 10-game stretch. It's that they didn't win over a 12-game stretch, and then they started poorly in the first place. games.
I think the real problem is that the team invested heavily in the fact that Alex Ramirez was a bad manager.
Oh, you mean they bought in on that?
Well, they invested a lot of their sort of PR capital on saying the reason we're not winning is because of Alex Ramirez. And so the problem with that is then if anything goes wrong, you're really in trouble because you just said that the only thing that was keeping him behind was Alex Ramirez. So if you change the manager, the team basically went out on a limb and said, look how safe this is. Oops. Yeah. You know, they put themselves in an untenable position, and now the limb is breaking. And they said, no, we didn't mean that. You know, that's not what we meant. We wanted to word it a different way. It wasn't the branch that he damaged. It was the whole root. Yeah, we got to change it. Hold on. Let's change our argument. So the problem was the Bay Stars basically blaming everything on Ramirez when there were lots of problems that Ramirez dealt with, some positively, and I would think some negatively. I want to find the manager who never did anything wrong because I don't, you know, they don't exist. But
yeah, that person.
But the point is, he dealt with those issues, and every manager has to deal with issues. But pretending that the issues don't exist was their biggest mistake.
Yeah, and so like I said, they had a really rough start to the season, and then they had this. What another streak of losses, the long streak of losses. And I also, the story I read said, look, they had scored 14 runs over the past 10 games. So that includes the ties. So before the streak, so it just, the offense really just kind of has died out. But I mean, they're not the only team. The Dragons have not had a good start to the season offensively. There's some other teams that are struggling. The Carp struggle at times offensively, but theirs are more pronounced because they weren't getting the pitching and they weren't playing good defense either. And I'm just looking at the choice for managers and I'm thinking, okay, Obana was a good choice, we thought, because he had done some things that with the Yakult Swallows and people thought, okay, well, it's time for him to get an opportunity. And he did, and the results weren't there. Now, I'm not sure about what the team was with him as well, but we expected improvement on the pitching staff that we didn't see. Then they went for a clown show in Nakahata, who was really popular. He was really popular, but was not.
Nakahata was amazingly popular with the writers. All the writers told me he's going to turn this team around. Because he just sucked up to the writers something fierce. I swear, if you had a pen in your hand, he'd come up and want to use it to sign an autograph for you.
Thinking. Well, yeah, I mean, he was more of a showman. He was more of the circus.
He's a wonderful, charming guy, and he's funny as all heck. And he's singing in the
walking party.
I know he would sing. He did Cassian Omuro would do that too, where he'd make up little riddles and you know, parody songs in his press conference. And Nakahata could do that too. He's really sharp with words. He's just, but he's, as a manager, he did, I will give him credit for doing one thing that the Bay Stars hadn't done in 10 years prior to him coming, which is the Bay Stars had a thing about better teams in the CL. Basically, if they were playing the Giants and they got like a run down, they'd give up. If they were playing a team that was well ahead of them in the standings and they got a couple of runs down, it was game over. They played terribly against good teams. I mean, unbelievably badly. And they'd beat the heck out of the Carp if they were bad, or the Tigers if they were bad, or the Swallows if they were bad. But then they played like 100 ball against the rest of the league, and that changed under Nakahata to where they sort of played up to their level against everybody. It wasn't a good level, but it was, you know, not lopsided.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember the games that well. I just know they finished sixth, fifth, fifth, and sixth under him. And like I said, 80 games under 500 for him in his four seasons. And again,
that's not a downward slide for the Bay Stars though. Fifth, sixth, and sixth was about where they were from the start. So
right, yeah, that's true. But the other thing is now they went out and got a manager. And I think all the fans, I think the media, I think everyone expected things to just turn around magically. And it's just not like that. He's a first year manager at this level, trying to deal with all the things that are involved in high competition here with everybody watching. You know, why did you pinch hit this guy? Why did you had this guy on your roster? How come he didn't come in and play late in the game? And now with, you know, obviously when you don't know if the game could go to 10 innings or even beyond, you have to manage differently. But when you know the game is going to go only 9 innings and you get to the 7th and 8th inning and you have X number of players on the bench and everybody knows who the pitchers are, we don't have a 3-batter minimum for pitchers, then the expectation in my mind is that you're going to manage like this is kind of like a World Series or a playoff situation, and that you're going to get guys off the bench, you're going to pinch run for players to get a little bit more speed, you're going to make those defensive changes because you know you don't have more to go than 6 outs defensively or whatever the case may be. And he's not making some of those moves. Now, I don't know if they're costing them games or not, but it just seems like they went for the popular guy again, and it's way too early to make decisions on who's a good manager. I don't want to see him step down or anything, but if they have another month like this where we're talking a month from now and they have 8 or 10 wins, that's going to be the talk. You know, when is Miura going to step down, or is he going to get fired? Because that's way too long to continue like this. Well, so they have to turn that around.
The Bay Stars front office has a pretty good analytics department, and I think what they need right now is a creative development project to come up with good excuses, because they may need.
Yeah, because look, the team batting average is horrible, slightly ahead of feeble Chunichi. The pitching and defense is last, or the pitching at least, the ERA is last, team ERA. The plus minus on Thursday, it was minus 50. I haven't gone to see where it is now. I guess I can look that up as we're talking, but not good, not in a good neighborhood if it was minus 50 and they lost a couple games in at Koshien by a bunch. So home runs, they weren't even hitting that many more home runs than the Dragons, who only had 4 for a long time. And the Dragons, poor guys, they only had 4. I think they hit 4 in 2 nights at Jingu, and they still lost. They got swept. So hitting home runs or lack of hitting home runs is not the only problem for the Dragons. But anyway.
Yeah, I did neglect to mention that Kazuki Mihara, the team's official representative to NPB, which is, they say representative, but they're not talking about, this is not the head of communications or some lackey. He's essentially the team's CEO.
The Bay Stars?
Yeah. He apologized in the media this past week for the Bay Stars not having their players on time,
I would attribute that to the front office
You know what, here's the thing, they weren't the only team essentially.
No, but they were one of the teams, and they count heavily on their foreigners. Those guys are core players.
They have the largest foreign contingent, I believe, in the league. But here's the thing, none of the other teams felt it was, well, of course, none of the other teams were 2-100, but none of the other teams, all these other teams, the Fighters had the same problem. And I talked to the people with the Fighters and they explained what the problem was. And, you know, it was unforeseen because it didn't match the way they brought the players in and the line. I'm sure it was the same with every team, but I'm almost thinking the apology makes me wonder if the team actually messed up in some way.
Well, I don't know. I probably did. I think part of it is not foreseeing that this could happen. But and we talked to a few players and they said, well, you know, I already had, in the case of Brandon Laird, he said, I already had my visa. But there were guys on other teams who it just didn't occur to teams or players or whomever, it didn't occur to.
But here's the thing. Everybody's in a little different circumstances. But, you know, Frank Herrmann was out of a contract when he left Japan with the Marines. And he re-signed in January. So there's no way he's a resident of Japan. But he was here for spring training.
Yeah.
It kind of bothers me why these other teams, you know, couldn't get it done. I'll tell you a story once. You know, sometimes in NPB, front offices are run like, you know, it's like really old school baseball. If the guys in charge don't know, well, then they just say it can't be done. So, which is sort of a, you know, a bureaucratic nonsense kind of thing. But I know Bobby Valentine once fired a guy. He's been a fairly successful executive with another team. I think it was just Bobby being Bobby, and he got annoyed with this guy's lousy answer. Why can we sign Tsuyoshi Shinjo? Bobby said after the 2004 season. And the guy said, no, we can't. Or maybe it was when he came. He says, no, we can't. And then a week later, Shinjo signed with the Fighters.
Mm.
And the reason he said we can't was because he didn't bother to figure if he could or not. So he just told Bobby a sort of a cover your ass answer, and that really annoyed him, and so he fired him.
Well, that happens in Japan all the time. You go into a city office and they say, well, we've never done that before, so no.
Yeah, it doesn't exist, exactly. Yeah. And I suspect that was the cause of a couple of the team's problems. They took that whatever flunky they sent to figure it out, like didn't bother to keep asking until he got somebody to help him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, much as we don't want to torture Michael Westbay and talk about how bad things are going for the Bay Stars, whose plus minus is minus 58, I just checked, and their 174 winning percentage here through 27 games played. Let's make a two-seam transition and talk about something fun, which is Masahiro Tanaka. Well, I don't like bashing, and you know, and that's hard. Guys cannot sleep. In fact, the announcers were talking about how Miura must not be able to sleep at night. Yeah. So anyway, let's talk about Masahiro Tanaka, the national event. I think that's going to go on Saturdays for a while now, called As the Pitch Turns. And that's going to be featuring Tanaka, and he takes national spotlight, I think, on Saturdays now. And I hope he pitches on Saturdays for quite a while now. The Eagles played host to the Lions, and Tanaka went six innings on Saturday, and he scattered three hits, and he hit the shoelaces of Corey Spangenberg, and who got awarded first base for that. And he struck out four and got a 2-1 victory. And it was his 100th victory in Japan. And, you know, I've been watching Kazuhisa Ishii, the manager, first year manager, making his pitching moves and when he's taking pitchers out. And I have to say, I probably would have taken Takahiro Norimoto out sooner a couple times this season already, but I really like what he's doing. He does really remind me, and I said this during the Pacific League prediction special, I said Katsuya Nomura was a manager I think he really looked up to, taught him a lot when they were together with the Swallows and winning championships. And I just had the subtle similarities there in the way his mannerisms. He's very calm on the bench. He's not jumping up and running up and down, or, you know, slamming the seats and doing the Hoshino stuff and the Senichi Hoshino kind of reactions. He's just back there taking it all in, and I like what he's doing. And I watched Tanaka. I didn't get to see all the pitches. I had a bunch of games on. I was working. So, boy, this work gets in the way. It does. So, but I thought Tanaka didn't really have, he didn't look that much different than he did from the Tokyo Dome debut game that he lost, except he didn't throw a couple fastballs that got mashed, but some of his other pitches got hit hard here and there. Some of the sliders, he was throwing a lot of softer stuff. I thought it was the softer side of Masahiro Tanaka that we saw. Okay. Goodness me. As the pitch turns and the softer side. Anyway, what did you see with Tanaka on Saturday?
Yeah, I thought actually he was a lot better. And it was, I'll pick up one thing I noticed last week, was that when he pitched, the Fighters were really motivated.
Right? Yes.
And I think what we're going to see, at least for a while, because it gets tiring, is a really high attention level by his teammates and the opponents when he pitches. The Lions came in with a plan, they had laid it out pretty. You could see it because they were in his first game. He started with a fastball and he couldn't throw it where he wanted to, and he didn't throw it very well a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he got burned over and over on the fastball, and so he went to the slider, which was really sharp and crisp, and his splitter, which was okay, and the slider basically kept everybody. You know, the fighters were then looking for fastballs and he stopped throwing them. Okay. And against the Lions, they came out basically saying, we're not going to look for the fastball. But what they were doing was getting ready to go down and go after splitters. Now, okay, he threw a couple of hanging sliders early on, and those got mashed.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't the, you know, the home run hit me fastballs like he threw at Tokyo Dome. He stayed away from the fastball at first. He went back to it. And when he went back to the fastball a lot in the fourth inning, and he was mixing up the fastball with the splitter and the slider, he was pretty much untouchable for the last three innings on the mound. The first three, he was pretty mediocre. And if the Eagles defense had not been really good, he could have given up three or four runs.
Agreed. Yeah. In fact, I think Gakuto Wakabayashi started off the game with a fly ball to center that that looked dangerous.
Sure. There was a couple of balls that were hit really well, and the Woo Nenting RBI single was a beautiful splitter, but he was basically saying, throw me a splitter away and I'll show you what I can do with it, because that's mm-hmm. pretty good. And there were a couple of well-hit balls off the splitter. Everybody was going, they were basically going to ignore the fastball and just wait for him to throw a splitter down in the zone. And I think they couldn't lay off those hanging sliders. So all in all, it was a good effort. It showed a lot of effort on the part of the Lions. I thought it showed a lot of effort on the part of the Eagles, and a lot of effort on the part of Masahiro Tanaka. So I have to agree, this is going to be a lot of fun this year.
Yep. All right. Now, last week, I did mention Hiromi Ito of the Fighters and talked about high quality starts. And I wanted to explain that a little bit better, because I actually thought that Jim would know what a high quality start was. And so I just thought I could throw it out there and not. I was trying to slip that fastball past you.
No, it was a change up to me, I'm afraid.
It was a change up.
That was the four-seam fastball that Norichika Aoki struck out Aaron Judge with that went down in MLB.com as a changeup.
Okay. Well, so I dug a little bit after the show, actually. I think I sent you a notice or an email or a message on Monday later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so a high-quality start is basically seven or more innings pitched with two runs or fewer allowed. And so it had, you know, nothing to do with the number of strikeouts or any of that. But Ito, again, he had another quality start on Wednesday, and he has done nothing but put up quality starts, and he's still without a win. The poor guy, he's pitching well. That is just so.
You can understand it. Although the Fighters' offense has been picked up quite a bit since it's funny, since they hit two home runs off Masahiro Tanaka last week, the home runs have been kind of coming.
Yeah, but you know that they didn't win their first home game officially at their home. I mean, they won a home game at Tokyo Dome, but they didn't win their first home game at Sapporo Dome mm-hmm. until Saturday.
Right.
And so, yeah, lots of troubles up there. I think we all predicted that in the show.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not surprising, I think, that Hiromi Ito has pitched very well and looked really good, hadn't won a game. I mean, Shota Suzuki, we were talking about him before the show, and he's a guy Marines. Who's pitched really well. I mean, he's pitched really well this year, and it took him until Sunday to win a game because he's pitched really well, but the best offense in Japan hasn't been able to score when he's been in the game.
Yeah.
So today, I think they decided to give up. You know, the bats were giving them the silent treatment, you know, the way they do with rookies hitting their first home runs in MLB. And right. He's going like, hey, guys. You know, you probably go to the locker room and say, hey, guys, yeah, I just couldn't score for you. Well, today they they gave up on it and they scored eight runs behind him.
Yeah. Yeah. Good support for him. But in terms of Hiromi Ito, he did set a record and he set a record for notching at least one strikeout in consecutive innings to start a career. And he did that in 23 consecutive innings.
Now, that was, I believe, a Fighters team record.
No, it was. It is an NPB record for rookies starting their career.
On opening
the other
day?
Rookies, no. The other records, the other records and team records for new players or rookie records and all those things were records that started in the middle of the season or after the debut. But his was from his debut. So since his first inning as a rookie, he struck out at least one batter in 23 consecutive innings. The all-time record in for strikeouts in at least one inning in MPB is 43, and that's a friend of the program, Dennis Sarfati.
Right.
He did that. But again, that was not from the start of his career or anything. So, yeah, it's tricky. There are a lot of qualifiers in there.
Indeed.
It was the first one to do it as a rookie from his debut, from the moment he debuted, so from his first inning. All right, a couple notes. One, Carter Stewart Jr. had his second appearance. I think that was also in Saturday's game, the Wild Saturday game at Zozo Marine Stadium against the Marines. And, yeah, he had some struggles.
He walked four guys and walked two runs in with the bases loaded, which put the he was put in with a one-run lead with the Hawks leading 6-5. And when he left, the Hawks were losing 7-6. And it was he kind of blew up a little bit. He threw some really good pitches, but you know, he didn't look entirely comfortable. But you know, his command was actually. I thought his command was very good for a guy who walked four batters.
I kind of thought at some point, I mean, there were some borderline pitches and I thought he got squeezed like a wedding night body. But, you know, those things happen too with young players. And then, like you said, what's that?
They do.
Yeah. And then, like you said, I think he did get a little bit frustrated. I think we could see that look of just kind of consternation, I think, on his face.
Well, he hops.
But.
He hops on the mound when he gets frustrated.
Hopping mad, huh?
I know it's like the Marines fans will probably adopt him as one of theirs. No, but he got frustrated at the end. And I also wanted to mention the umpire is a 34-year-old umpire who I think has umpired at all the umpiring positions in like 112 games. So it was probably about his 30th game behind the plate.
Okay.
In his life. And
so you're saying there's an adjustment period still going on there.
I'm saying,
especially at Chiba, where the wind can, you know, play tricks with you.
Which is, he's, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions. I thought, you know, I think the umpires try to do a good job, and I'm sure he wouldn't be where he was if everyone around him wasn't convinced he was there trying to do a good job. So, but still, he's relatively young. And somebody said to me on Twitter, how can Japanese umpires be so bad? And this was an American, and I said, well, like, do you watch MLB at all?
Hashtag high heat. Yeah.
And in Japan, if the umpires are bad over and over and over again, they get, you know, unless I guess they're the senior umpire, and even the senior umpire in Japan for a long time was well reviewed because he was good at calling balls and strikes, but he was a terrible umpire otherwise. But but generally, yeah, most of the I'm curious what happened to him. If they're involved in public events, they tend to get sent down to the minors.
Yeah, public events.
You know, if they become part of the show, ended up and the aforementioned Atsushi Kitaka. He got banished to the minors during the Japan series. So.
Yeah, it can happen. But I always say there are three teams on the field. We only concentrate on the two that are competing against each other, but the other crew on the field has to be good too, or else we notice it, and that's the umpiring crew.
But it was so. it was the calls, if they were, I can't say he was squeezed badly. I just, you know, it was a little inconsistent. I thought the Hawks tried to adjust, and Mr. Stewart's still 20 years old, and you know, and this is his profession, and he's trying to do a good job, and it's like the third time he's pitched in a game with thousands of people in the stands.
Yeah, it's a learning experience. Sure. I think losing and it's such a better life lesson than winning sometimes.
I know. I would have a lot of good life lessons then.
Well, I'll never call you a loser, Jim. You know that.
I know you wouldn't. Because you're too polite to say something.
No. All right. And then this past week, we did see this very rare play. And I know Jim wanted to bring it up. So you introduce it. And
we had a play.
My 2 cents or 2 yen. I guess you need 5 yen.
No, 2 yen, because that was Mr. Araki's former number.
That's true.
So John pointed this out. I didn't see it I didn't see it live, but I did want to go back. In fact, John tipped me off to a couple of plays recently. That.
So you are following me on Twitter. That's good to know.
Yeah, I don't always answer, but I do see.
Okay.
And it was the Bay Stars were playing the Chunichi Dragons during the week, and the Chunichi Dragons won a game 1-0, despite hitting into a 3-6-1-5-2 double play that I, in fact, called the 3-6-coach-1-5-2 double play, because it was intended to be 3-6-1, but the ball was wide of first base, and first base coach Masahiro Araki, the 2000 hit second baseman for the Chunichi Dragons.
Gold glove second baseman,
and just a wonderful guy.
And a skinny, really good skinny, you know, narrow-hipped athlete of a person.
Yep.
So what's your problem, dude?
The ball hit him. He didn't get out of the way of the ball. And when the
jump, ball, man, jump. Indeed. What are you doing dancing? I just realized that he cannot dance.
He just jumped. He lifted his right foot and it hit it, you know. So anyway, he did a blade save on that, and the runner on second was going to score because the ball was going to go, you know, into foul territory with no one to back it up, but the Araki provided the backup for the Bay Stars. The pitcher grabbed the ball and threw it to third. They got him in a rundown and tagged it. The catcher tagged him out. So that was unique.
Unique to say the least. And, you know, I think early on in the podcast life, Michael Westbay and I used to email each other and talk about the Bay Stars, especially when the Dragons were going on, because those are our teams. And we would chat back and forth. But on this night, I was saying Michael was upset because the Bay Stars ended up losing the game on an error late right. in the game. And I said, well, yeah, think back to the inning when they had the 3-6-1-5-2 double play with the coach getting in the way. And that should have been a run. And then don't get mad about the run that did score on it.
Yeah, that was a tough one too. I mean, it was an unfortunate play, but Tatsuhiro Shibata, there are two outs, and Tatsuhiro Shibata, the Bay Stars second baseman, made a wonderful play to keep the ball in the infield, dove to stop it, and then he tried to get the out at first that would have ended the Dragons' chance to win the game. But he misfired. So instead of having two outs and runners on the corners, they got the go-ahead run and the Bay Stars failed to score in the bottom of the ninth. And that was the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was unfortunate. But the weird double play was a contributor to the frustration, I'm sure, because they were able to get the out. So I suppose when you're in the midst of a skid or a slide, and you get that out, and you get to the ninth inning, and you get two outs, you don't expect a run to come across. Because I think just before that, they had tried to pickoff throw at first base, and the umpires ruled save, and they went to the replay, and I don't know that Takamatsu was safe, but they couldn't overturn it with the replay. There just wasn't any visual proof that he was out.
Mm.
But I think had they ruled him out, they wouldn't have been able to say he was safe either. So close call, then that run ends up scoring eventually. So it was a tough loss. I mean, those are the things that really, really, really frustrate fans and players when you're in a bet. Things are going poorly anyway.
Yeah, so yeah. If you're a Hawks fan, and you know, if you're a Hawks fan, and they have a game like, you know, like a series this weekend in Chiba where a lot of runs happen to score, they'll be like, okay, well, we'll beat them up next week.
We'll beat them up next week, exactly. All right, well, we're kind of out of time here. I did want to mention that I'm really, I had the Swallows finishing fourth. I really like what I'm seeing from them. I'm really surprised about the Hiroshima Carp, and you made mention before we started recording about how they're basically seventh, eighth, and ninth inning guys are all rookies who were drafted last year, so they're first-year rookies. And they're taking care of business at the back end of the business end of the games here for the Carp, and that's one of the reasons that they're doing so well. And the Fighters keep trugging along. They're not looking good. They're having their struggles, although they came back to get a tie today. So I'm sure they were happy.
Yeah, I think there were basically, I guess 26 active guys and 25 of them were happy with a tie.
There you go.
I think if you ask Naoki Mihanishi, he probably would disagree.
Yeah. Wow. Did he have he had that expression of what is going on out here? What is this really my life?
Yeah. That poor Tyler Higgins is like, hey, he'll never hit this fastball out. It's like, I mean, I feel bad for these guys when you make a good pitch and bad things happen. So, okay.
It doesn't sound like it when you're chuckling like that, but okay.
No, I do, because it's just so much part of the game. I mean, you know, the funniest thing from the game, and I mentioned it, was Masataka Yoshida. The Fighters shift against him all the time, the left-handed hitter for the Oryx Buffaloes, and they were playing again, and Nippon Ham started Chihiro Kaneko, the former Buffalo's ace, and they were shifting. And he got three hits and three at-bats against them. And they were doing a shift, and I won't explain the details, but basically there was no shift on when he hit with two strikes. And he singled one. The first time he singled off the wall in right field. The second time with a regular shift on, he hit one to left field, which would have been hit regardless of what they did. And the third time was a 1-0 count, and he hit a fat pitch, and he lined it over the third baseman who was playing in short right field.
Okay.
So the punchline to that is him going to back to first base, and he and Kaneko basically couldn't stop laughing. They're both smiling and giggling like, yeah, you hate the shift too? Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I hate getting three hits on you too, buddy.
No, I know, but they were like going, I told them not to shift against you, but, you know, there you go. And he's going, I told them they shouldn't shift against me too, and there you go.
All right. It's been a long show. Thank you for hanging in there, everybody. We've got a question. We'll have it on hold for next week, but we want your question as well. Please send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter with the hashtag HighHeat @JBWPodcast, or send us a note on the Facebook page, and we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
And see you at the ballpark.